Thanks, Oleg. I'd like to start by thanking the organizers for organizing this very stimulating program and giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts on Majorana's, which is one of my favorite. So I'll start by introducing Majorana's and what Majorana fermions are, or what we call Majorana fermions, and then I'll focus on the semiconductor structure, but which is what I've worked on for the most part. But there are other, but I'll try to make it apply to other potential candidates. So so feel free to ask me questions as I go along. Okay, so what are Majorana fermions? Well, the history really goes back to particle physics or high energy physics, where Dirac first figured out that if fermions, quantizing fermions in a relativistically consistent way, required one to introduce particles and holes, and then Majorana found this disturbing and found a way out of it, which was if you could make a particle which was its own antiparticle, that means the particle and the hole could be equivalent in some sense, then that would be what he proposed in particle physics. And whether there is a Majorana fermion in particle physics is or in nature as a fundamental particle, that's an interesting question by itself. What we call Majoranas in solid state are inspired by Majorana's fermions, but really because of the freedom in condensed matter to talk about lower dimensional systems, like 1+1 dimensional systems or 2+1 dimensional systems, the objects are also somewhat different. So in a way that I'll explain in the next, this slide and the next slide. So ordinary fermions, we're all familiar with, we're all mostly theorists, so we're familiar with the second quantized notation. So we describe creation of an operator for electrons as something that takes an empty state and puts a particle in it and makes it filled. And Dirac's hole operators are basically just the canonical conjugate. So it takes a filled state and makes it empty. So from that, based on that argument, the simple, the operator that would make a particle equivalent to a hole would be a fermionic operator that is self-conjugate or adjoint. And this, as expected, has the property that if I take a state and apply the operator once, it takes the empty state, makes it filled. If I apply it a second time, it takes a filled state and makes it empty.
Sorry, is this true, what you've written, that neutrinos and antineutrinos are the same?
Possibly is crucial, and I'm not terribly up to date. The possibly might have been negated already, but I'm not a. But I thought this is still. No, my understanding is this is still. This is still out for debate because there is this. There is still a search for a double beta decay. If that process happens, then neutrino would be shown to be its own antiparticle. Because it's neutral, it has a chance, right? Yeah. All right. So. So now, if I compare a Majorana with a regular fermion, what I realize that if I think of a fermion as a complex number, then a Majorana is like a real number. What that tells us is that any complex fermion can be written as a pair of Majoranas, and vice versa. I can take a pair of Majoranas and construct a complex fermion. But this is already a weird situation because a complex fermion has the smallest possible Hilbert space. It's two-dimensional. Well, okay, there's smallest non-trivial Hilbert space. So that would be one qubit or quantum state, and Majorana somehow managed to split this into 2 degrees of freedom, which is already telling you that something interesting would happen. It's fractionalized in this sense, which is a little different from the usual sense, so that's why I put quotes. Okay, now what consequences does this have? So if I have, like, say, a one-dimensional system which has, which is topological, and by topological, we heard a lot about various kinds of topology from Jen yesterday, but I'm just in our context right now, it's just a specific example, which is a 1D system with a pair of Majoranas that are separated at the two ends. If I want to describe the ground state of the system, well, since the Majoranas are only low-energy excitations, I would have to make a fermion operator out of gamma 1 and gamma 2, and then there are two states, which are the fermion 0, it's empty, or the fermion state is filled. Those are my two states, n equals 0 and n equals 1. And again, as I now, there's an interesting situation where I can take a Majorana operator and change the occupation of this non-local fermion operator from either end, right? And this leads to an interesting situation that forces these two states to actually be degenerate. Because if, let's for a second imagine that they're not degenerate, I have this weird thing where I can inject, apply a Majorana fermion, but which I can do by just injecting a regular electron from the left-hand side, change the energy of the whole system, and get that energy back by pulling it out from the right-hand side, and that would mean I could basically essentially sort of move energy arbitrarily fast in a non-local way, which is bad. So basically the answer is resolved just by these two states being degenerate, right? So the thing is that if I have a Majorana fermion, I can think of it as a qubit, possibly, with a little bit of modification that I'll explain, and some form of locality and conservation of fermion parity is what protects this degeneracy. And I'll talk about conservation of fermion parity more later. That just fermion parity just is this degree of freedom, whether n equals 0 or n equals 1. If there are free electrons around, then that can always flip this state. Right, so that'll be something that we will worry about. Yes.
Jay, I know for people talking this is trivial, but if you act on the parameter number n with a product of gamma 1 and gamma 2,
that's
that
right.
Changes the parity sector, correct?
No. Gamma 1 times gamma 2 is proportional to n, so it commutes with n. So gamma 1, either gamma 1 or gamma 2 changes n.
Yes, sir.
Anti-commutes? Right. Yeah.
So
gamma 1 anti-commutes with n, and gamma 1 flips n, gamma 2 flips n. That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Can I see this intuitively? Because gamma 1, naively, is a sum of creation and relational parity.
Exactly.
Naively, you would think, well, if it acts on a given n, it shouldn't change.
No. So the thing is that gamma is a sum of an electron C and C dagger. Either way, you either increase the number or decrease the number. So the point is you have to change the number.
Okay.
And fermions have only two options for numbers. But that leads to a great point. So let me just elaborate before on what kind of systems can have these. The degeneracy between n equals 0 and n equals... n cannot really be number of electrons in the system because I can always change my chemical potential and shift what my energy reference is. I have to have something that pins my chemical potential to zero, which means, with few exceptions, in some sense, the system has to be a superconductor to accommodate Majoranas, right? And the Kitaev, honeycomb, etc., are also, in some sense, can be viewed as superconductors. That's where fermion parity comes in a superconductor. Fermion number is not conserved, but parity is conserved because of Cooper pairing. Okay. Now I'll talk about some basic transport measurement signatures of Majoranas, which are like the basic characterization of Majorana modes. And the system I'll focus on is the one that I've thought about the most, which is some kind of semiconductor nanowire with spin orbit coupling in a Zeeman, next to a superconductor and in a Zeeman field. So that band structure of the nanowire from spin orbit and spin orbit and Zeeman looks something like that, and you have a pair. You can have this if your chemical potential is inside the gap. You have only one set of Fermi points, and that's roughly where you get Majorana's, which means that this condition is satisfied. The Zeeman is greater than square root delta square plus mu squared. So this is sort of an old story by now. The issue is, though, I mean, if this the simple non-interacting system, if could be realized, would have Majorana's, but nature has interactions, disorder, and dissipation. So I'll tell you what that did a little bit. So just to make it clear, so how did we envision looking for Majorana's? Well, there would be two critical signatures. One is the Majorana's appear in a topological phase. They can't appear in a trivial phase, which means if at zero magnetic field I have a trivial phase, if I apply magnetic field to get into the topological phase, I have to close the gap somewhere, so there'd be a gap closure. And the gap of the reentrant phase would depend on spin orbit coupling. If there was no spin orbit, the magnetic field would just kill superconductivity. Together, if we calculate the conductance, the Majorana's into the end, the Majorana's would lead to like a resonant bound state conductance once they appear. So the function of Zeeman field, you would see a zero bias conductance peak appear. The zero bias conductance peak was suggested to be was argued to be quantized. I'll talk about this in a little more details in a bit. So the point, our hope was that, well, if the bulk gap could be measured and shown to vanish and the zero bias peak appeared the same field, there would be some form of bulk edge correspondence, and that would be fairly unambiguous story for measurement for Majorana's. Unfortunately, it turned out that the bulk gap is much harder to measure. But we didn't complain too much because, well, at least something was measured. So transport experiments did happen in these wires, and I'm giving some, not the earliest, but some of the latest ones. And for a theorist, that's pretty good. So the system is a nanowire, and actually after a pretty amazing effort supported by Microsoft in a device fabrication, the group at Copenhagen figured out how to get aluminum epitaxially grown on the indium arsenide semiconductor nanowire, and that gives a very clean interface. Turns out disorder is no good for most systems with most of these topological superconductors. Then what the experiment was to measure conductance from this lead V into this tunnel lead V through a tunnel gate into this superconductor with a Zeeman field that points along the wire, or a magnetic field that points along the wire. And what was seen was that there was, certain fields, there was a zero bias peak that was almost quantized. And as a function of magnetic field, you can see that, well, there's sort of a plateau. What was encouraging for us, this was a very encouraging signature that, well, you got a quantized zero bias peak that satisfies what I'll explain is a necessary condition in some sense for having nanowires that can be used for quantum information processing. And so far, very preliminary data on the iron superconductors that Liang Fu talked about 10 days ago at the workshop. Those are the other systems so far that have a quantized conductance, though the data isn't quite publicly available yet, thanks to science. So why do I care? I'm going to tell you in a bit, as a lot of you know, that the zero bias conductance, I'm going to complain about zero bias conductance in a little bit. And a lot of you know that this is not necessarily a smoking gun. But on the other hand, it's still kind of important. Firstly, if to know a zero bias state exists, you want to, tunneling is the easiest way to see it. But the other point is this quantization is also kind of important because, let's see why. So the experiment is a normal lead tunneling into a superconductor, right? So, and the topological superconductor is potentially gapped. If it's gapped, then an electron coming in has only two options. It's, well, firstly, it's going to be reflected, And it can either be normal reflected, so that's REE, or it can be André reflected, REH. And there's a matrix that has a particular hole structure, so that's why these two are really related to the top two. And this matrix has to be unitary. These combination of these, just these rules, so particle hole symmetry, unitarity, okay, there's an assumption on the number of channels. Ideally, this works for spinless channels, so if you can get rid of the spin, but also kind of works for spin full. And if it's in the topological state, then the under reflection has to be perfect. There's no assumption about interactions or anything of the sort. This is just as long as the lead is Fermi liquid, in a sense. So it has well-defined fermions. This is true. My understanding is this is also kind of true for Luttinger liquid. So that doesn't change it. Interaction doesn't change it substantially. So the way you get away from this is, well, if you have finite temperature now, you broaden your peak by temperature, thermally broaden your peak, that can lower it, or there's a process of poisoning, which I'll explain in a second. So as long as these two are less than some kind of effective width for the Majorana, which is related to the normal state conductance in units of quantic conductance, and an energy scale, which is roughly the quasi-particle gap, this quantization should be robust. So if I make my temperature low enough, then my only excuse for not quantization becomes this gamma poisoning. And gamma poisoning is basically the rate at which fermions from somewhere else come into my Majorana and flip my Majorana qubit, right? So in a sense, quantization of the conductance, if I don't see quantization, that puts a lower bound on this rate of this process, and that's no good. No, it's not good news.
Can I ask a question about this poisoning? So this poisoning is seen not just in Majorana, but just about in every superconductor.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Do they have any idea what that actually is, apart from just saying it's poisoning?
I think the problem is this is getting morbid, and it's a little bit like cancer, in the sense that there are many sources for poisoning. Poisoning is just a process by which fermions come in. So let me give a list of things. So I think the original devices for these Majoranas, they were using niobium superconductors. Niobium superconductors are extremely dirty. Their mean free path is of order, mean free path is of, it's order of lambda Fermi, right? So there in that kind of a superconductor, when you add a magnetic field, Anderson's theorem breaks down very quickly, you get all kinds of states. You can also introduce vortex lines. Those have states. So those are kinds that are obvious. Now the superconducting qubit community has been they're the first people to worry about this, and their worry is much more mysterious. If you estimate this rate from Boltzmann. If you know that the superconductor is gap-like aluminum, if you estimate the rate, it should be suppressed by a Boltzmann factor of x e to the minus gap over t, and that doesn't seem to work. And there, at least all the mechanisms that I have heard of is that there is a bottleneck for quasi-particles to go away because they have to find a partner to recombine into a Cooper pair. That's just,
they basically don't know.
They don't know. That's the bottom line. Yeah, but there's no. It's not a universal phenomena either. And at least in many cases. So that phenomena in aluminum might be universal, and that might be the ultimate. But there are many other sillier reasons for poisoning, or more obvious reasons. Those we do know. Okay. To worry about what's the problem with zero bias peaks, why we need to go further. So that zero bias peak means Majoranas, and pretty soon after the experimental observations in 2012, we were reminded of this by several people of this old story from random matrix theory, which is that if you have a quantum dot next to a superconductor so that you have particle hole symmetry, you do not have time reversal symmetry and do not have spin conservation. So that symmetry class puts you in symmetry class D, which is exactly where we have Majoranas, and that's also the symmetry class where by accident, the chances of getting a zero bias state by accident are much higher than all the other symmetry classes, because you don't have level repulsion at zero energy and you have level repulsion everywhere else, right? So that's one bad news, one thing to worry about. And the other thing to worry about, which is what I'll elaborate a little more on, so this is the thing to worry about, but on the other hand, one can probably put bounds on how frequently these things are supposed to happen by pure accident, and if they're supposed to be quantized or not. They're most likely, there's no good reason why they should be quantized that anyone is aware of. So we can probably use experiments to rule these out. The second one, which I'll talk about a little more, is a very close cousin of Majorana's. And it comes from, it's like a quantum Hall edge reconstruction from a soft boundary. So if the end is somehow softer, there's some kind of potential. Basically, you can have a pair of topological channels by accident. So we need to be careful, basically, to distinguish topological Majoranas from just pairs of Majoranas. I'll try to elaborate on this. And I want to say that this is, in general, a problem, even for nanowires. Even though I'm going to elaborate on nanowires, we expect this to be kind of ubiquitous. So the experiments on these came from Copenhagen. So again, the same kind of thing, nanowire with epitaxially grown aluminum. But the thing is that this time, on measurement of transport, one sees a Coulomb blockade resonance at the gate, which means that there is a quantum dot at the end. And when one looks for Majoranas in this device, one sees something strange. A pair of Andreas states come and coalesce into a Majorana. Majorana should appear out of a gap closing from a bulk, so out of a topological transition. So an isolated pair of states can't come and stick into Majorana. So just by itself, that looks not suspicious. And when we did appropriate theory simulations, this is in collaboration with Shankar and Tudor, who have actually been worrying about this a lot more than I have, in a sense. So what one finds is that if one raises the chemical potential, and remember the density of electrons in the wire isn't something we can control. So in the high density, we might expect to be in the high density regime, where one needs a large Zeeman field to get into the topological regime. But when the Zeeman field exceeds the superconducting gap, we essentially get this Andreas state. So this is a situation to worry about. And how this happens was better elucidated by this picture from this paper from Delft. So in the case of Majoranas, so this is a normal lead on the left here, and this is the Majorana system on the right, is a superconductor. And there would be a pair of Majoranas. And you expect that the tunneling from the transport properties show up because the tunneling into the left Majorana is much gamma 1, is much stronger than tunneling into the right Majorana gamma 2. But a very similar situation can happen if I have a Zeeman field which is much bigger than the superconductivity. What can happen is that each spin sector sort of forms its own Majorana at the end, but one of the spin sectors couples more efficiently to the lead, and basically the signatures look quite a bit like a Majorana. And if you plot the wave functions, that's sort of what you find. The different Andrea bound states kind of come from different spin sectors. Right? So we need other signatures. So I'm going to now sort of speculate about a few more possibly interesting signatures to look for. Most of these have now, these are going to go into the world where it's of speculation, in the sense that we don't have definitive experiments for any, or we don't have experiments, convincing experiments for these yet. So let me step back and provide sort of an alternative definition for a topological superconductor here, now in the spirit, more in the spirit of a topological response rather than Majranas. So the question is, I mean, ultimately, Majrana should be characterized, the topological superconductor should be characterized by a bulk property, right? Some kind of anomaly. And this anomaly should not be connected to being non-interacting or anything like that. So what is that anomaly? And this was actually explained in Reed and Green's paper in some form. Though they were mostly focusing on two-dimensional systems. So the basic question is, if I put a topological superconductor in a ring and change flux in the ring, insert superconducting flux quanta, what happens? So what I'm going to consider spinless P-wave spinless superconductor. And there are two cases, no flux quanta and pi flux quanta for half flux quanta for electrons, which means a full superconducting flux quanta. Okay, now if I look at the moment, so what I'm plotting here is the energy versus momenta, and the momentum of the electrons in the rings is quantized, but if I have no flux and k equals zero is an allowed state, it's a periodic boundary condition, so k equals zero is allowed. And what's strange property number one for this P-wave superconductor is that when I pair them up, I have an odd number of states in the ground, odd number of electrons in the ground state. This is already very different from a BCS superconductor, which is supposed to be made of Cooper pairs with an even number, right? But that doesn't make it topological by itself. I can make this happen even in an S-wave superconductor if I apply have a magnetic impurity. But now what I can do is insert a superconducting flux quantum, which is now changes the boundary condition to antiperiodic, and now I have the k equals zero state is gone, and now I have an even number of electrons. So the defining property of this class D topological superconductor is that the fermion parity changes under flux insertion, or changing the periodic boundary conditions from periodic to antiperiodic. The next question is, well, but the system can't change its, isolated system can't change the number of electrons it has. So what happens is that if I have any kind of weak link, the extra electron is going to show up as a quasiparticle. When I change boundary condition, it's going to show up as a quasiparticle in this junction. And that's what leads to the Josephson current being different between zero flux and one superconducting flux. And that leads to the so-called fractional Josephson effect, right? So any regular superconductor should have, this Josephson current should be periodic with flux, but for the topological superconductor, it's different with flux quanta, and that's because of this property.
That's half of the period, isn't it?
This is half for an electron, but it's a full superconducting flux quanta.
So?
Okay. Yes.
So this may be related. There's a hot vortices, or they actually?
No, these are full. These are just full vortices. But this is also spinless, so you should keep that in mind.
So yeah. Let's take an example of, I think it's technically class A, two-dimensional P plus NP superconductor. Let's preserve you once in symmetry, just
yeah,
a short
yeah.
The prediction would be you should have a dispersive Majorana modes on the surface, gapless Majorana
states. So I am thinking about right now 1D and 2D, not 3D. So this is a little bit. But now let's talk about 2D because that's the closest.
So let's do 2D.
So then the statement is now if you put, and this was literally what Reed and Green were talking about. So if you put it on a torus, so their statement is, so you have to put it on a torus. So then there are no gapless states anymore, right? So you got rid of all the edges. It has no edge left.
Yes.
And now I can change boundary conditions along the two holes of the torus. I can change boundary conditions from being periodic to antiperiodic, and the statement is that if I just change one of them, then I'd have to kick a quasi-vertical out.
I see.
Right. Okay. One of the ideas that we proposed recently was, well, you can look for this, if you can make a topological superconducting ring, which is not far from reality for semiconducting wires, you can look for this parity anomaly. But now it would be connected to leads, so the number of electrons will actually change. There will be nothing in the junction, and the the number of electrons will change from being even to odd. And if I adjust my Coulomb blockade so that I'm on resonance for even, when I change the flux quantum, it'll go to odd. Now, this leads to a situation where conductance as a function of flux quantum is two superconducting flux periodic. The thing here that to be careful about here is that this is a little bit, if I didn't have superconductivity, if it was just electrons, this would be just regular electron periodic. So there's potential room for confusion with Aronov-Bohm oscillations. But the point is this one, by changing the Coulomb, turning the Coulomb blockade on and off, one can clarify that.
But if you have more than one electron on this island, then
There are plenty of electrons. Yeah.
Should you include electronic interactions?
Absolutely. So this is all with electronic interactions. Electron-electron interaction completely included. Yeah. For the calculation, it's included at the level of a quantum dot, which means it's the total charging energy for the system.
Yeah. So the charging energy is just like the total compressibility of the system, but
right.
Coulomb interaction between the electrons.
For metallic dots, it's soft. We can talk about this later. So at least for regular metallic quantum dots, that's often subdominant because of screening, etc. I just want to point to a few more. So we're not the only people to play around with Coulomb blockade and superconductivity by Majorana's for a long shot. This is one of the fun games with Majorana fermions. So what I just said is also can be viewed as close cousin of Majorana teleportation that Liang Fu predicted. This is figures from towards the paper by Karzig et al. From Microsoft. So here the story is again, it's a ring, but now the tunneling at the ends is not high enough that the Majorana still exists at the ends, and you can essentially send electrons through the Majoranas, that's called teleportation, and you'd see, again, interference as if it were a regular electron. Another interesting game was started by Berry and Cooper, and there are several variants of this. You can look at you have a two-state system, you can look at a Kondo effect, and the Kondo effect looks quite different when you make it out of Majorana wires. Okay. So now coming to back to the story of quantum information processing or braiding, now we're going even further out. But this is the direction that ultimately, if one wants to do quantum information processing with Majorana, one has to go. So I told you how you store information with Majoranas. It's the fermion parity of a pair of Majoranas. But then the next question is, what about processing this information in some way, applying gates? That's done by this process of braiding, and which means essentially exchanging the Majoranas 1 and 2. Here's a pair of vortices with Majoranas. I'm imagining now a two-dimensional system. And this was laid out by Ivanov almost 20 years ago now. So the point is, now what's important is to keep track of these branch cuts, which are where the superconducting phase changes by 2 pi. And if you do the exchange, if you don't want the branch cut to intersect the vortex, if you want to avoid singularities, you have to wind the branch cut around first. But then I want my branch cuts to come back to this original configuration. So this branch cut has to cross the Majorana. The branch cut's sort of a hypothetical object anyway. So what it does essentially is change the sign of the Majorana and nothing else. So ultimately, what happens is that one goes, switches position with two, so goes here, one, but two goes from the bottom, flips a sign, and takes position one. So gamma one goes to gamma two goes to minus gamma one. So more generally, this is actually true completely generally, and this is just because, so if I have a unitary operator, which is this time evolution, take gamma two into gamma one up to a sign, gamma 1 takes gamma 2 up to a sign. The fermion parity has to be conserved. It cannot flip. So the pair of signs has to be different. So this minus sign is sort of an essential part of however you do it for whatever kind of Majoranas. So in 1D, it wasn't clear where this would come from. And Jason LSA and collaborators quite a while ago figured out how to do this in 1D using a Majorana network. So I want to quickly elaborate how this would work, because 2D P plus IP type Majoranas might not be the easiest kind to get to. So one way to view this is just as a measurement-only approach. So if I take a pair of Majoranas, one Majorana wire and another auxiliary pair of Majoranas, and I make sure that this pair, I measure the fermion parity of this, and make sure that this is, let's say, empty, then I can measure the pair in between, and that actually transfers the Majoranness of gamma 2, degree of freedom of gamma 2 to gamma 4. So it just moves that way. One way this measurement would work is, again, using the Coulomb blockade kind of geometry and doing transport through this pair of Majoranas, and then with a flux phi, and by measuring the conductance through the flux phi, one can, this was figured out in this work by Pluga et al., so one can measure a pair of Majoranas just by transport. That would be one way. Now, once we can do that, then if I want to interchange this pair of Majoranas 1 and 2 from different wires, I would bring this auxiliary pair and then do the following operation. So I would measure this pair, that pair, and that pair in sequence. One more. And then that basically flips 2 and 1 and gives me a sign which depends on all the results of the measurement. Right. So that's how grading would work with these Majoranas. Okay. I have doing pretty well on time, I guess. So good. So now I'm going to come to other. That's a broad framework of the Majorana system as opposed to as for nanowires. Very similar ideas should apply to other Majorana systems. So now, in terms of materials, so the idea is, well, we need superconductivity, some form of time reversal breaking, and spin orbit coupling, right? So once we get these objects, we should be able to get into the topological phase. And one key challenge is this fermion parity protection. And the problem really comes partly from Zeeman time reversal breaking. Time reversal breaking breaks Anderson's theorem, which says that disorder should not affect superconductivity. So for semiconductors, this is actually a challenge. Though spin orbit coupling kind of makes this problem, alleviates this problem, so it's kind of a little bit of a balancing act. There might be a hopefully there's a sweet spot there. Another way is to go to topological insulators, where technically you don't need time reversal, at least in as crucial a way, but you still do. So for example, quantum spin Hall, which is very nice and we can get superconductivity in it with no problem, that has, there the challenge is you need a ferromagnet to get a Majorana. It's actually quite funny because the topological superconducting signature that I said, the Coulomb blockade fermion parity change, you don't need ferromagnets to do that in a quantum spin Hall, strangely. But to get a bona fide Majorana, you do need a ferromagnet. And ferromagnets are leaky so far. So they have subgap states, I think. 3D topological insulators could be very nice, but most of them have some level of bulk conductance. And the claim is that there are very newer ones with a very low bulk conductance, but we're talking low as in electrons per nanosecond, kind of low at least. So, or tens of nanoseconds kind of low. So that's, I think, much lower. Also another kind of problem which might be related to fermion parity is superconductors have oxides, and electrons hop around in oxides, and that leads to some time-dependent disorder. Again, something to avoid if possible. This oxide being a major problem often limits us to aluminum, as a low temperature super as a superconductor. Here I should point out, actually, aluminum is only one of the very few superconductors, actually published clearly, I think is the only one, that shows a 2 equilum blockade that you expect from Cooper pairs. Most superconductors end up showing 1 E, as if like a Coulomb blockade of a regular metal, even though we believe it's gapped. And this probably has to do with the oxide again.
When you say oxide, you mean physical aluminum oxide?
Yeah, just the physical aluminum oxide on the surface stuff. But aluminum is a low-temperature superconductor, so that sucks. Okay. Now I'm going to talk about topological superconducting iron. That's the one that Liang Fu talked about, but I want to review this again because this is the only one that has promise for quantized conductance, which I said was sort of a minimum requirement. And this system, again, is just to review from Liang's talk, is basically a three-dimensional. So you take iron superconductor, which is a regular superconductor in the bulk, and the surface, through doping, the bulk gets a band inversion, which means the surface direct cones appear on the surface, which is pretty amazing, I think. And because it's superconducting in the bulk, you get a proximity effect from the bulk on the surface, and so you have, that's the realization of Liang Fu and Charlie Kane's proposal for realizing Majorana's. When you do ARPES, you really can see these direct cones. And if you look at, now here this is 15 Kelvin, so you can't see the gap. The gap is hard to see in this plot. But if I fix my momentum and plot the intensity, which is here, and go to lower temperatures, but you see that a coherence peak clearly develops. So there is like a 2.5 volt superconducting gap. So now the cool thing is, the superconducting gap and the Fermi energy here are comparable. So, which means that if one creates a Majorana, one expects a relatively large gap to other mini gap to excited states, which scale by delta square over EF. So that's the other advantage. The other problem with most topological insulator-based proposals. You'd usually take a topological insulator and put some aluminum on it or some other superconductor. But then this mini gap is often very small, and then it becomes difficult to figure out to see the Majorana in transport. Okay, so and then what the experiment did is, well, it applies a magnetic field, small magnetic field, creates a bunch of vortices, well, small as in of the order of a Tesla, you get a bunch of vortices, and then by doing STM. You can see a peak which is nearly quantized. Now, what I want to say here is that this is not quite quantized because this is the archive version. I have seen other versions where this is actually close to one, but it's in press and science. There's another paper which actually sees a dip which is quantized. So there are actually two, but the data is much less clear. So this material is promising, and based on that, we have been actually imagining that we can then try to measure the Majorana qubit by bringing these vortices close together by AFM, which is my collaborator Jenny Helfman from Harvard plans to try. The qubit measurement, so this kind of a qubit measure. So the quasiparticle poisoning is not terrible in this system, which is magical, that it gets you close to quantized conductance, but there might be states in the vortex line, which is the next worry. Yes.
So may I ask again?
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't phrase it properly. So the question I had before was essentially about this setup. Isa is a Fukane setup.
Okay.
Plus 3DTI.
Good.
Plus a S-wave superconductor. Or we could just think of people as a superconductor.
Yeah.
Now imagine I thread a vortex, just external magnetic field.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So then usually the statement is that indeed you should localize a 0 pound Majorana Andrea state in the vortex core. So how do I square this with the statement you made earlier? which is that if I imagine a pulse going around the vortex, having inserted the vortex is like changing a boundary condition from periodic to underperiodic. This should map back on the story you told us.
Yeah.
Well, you have a strip, you bend it together, you eliminate the edge, and now you change the boundary condition, and as you said, that's kind of ejects one quasi-particle from the bulk. How do I phrase it?
Yeah, this is, I guess, a somewhat complicated story in this 3D TI. So to be honest, I have to think a little more about it, but the complications here are, firstly, I need to somehow introduce periodic boundary conditions, so I'd have to wrap this around. And the other thing is, it's not about inserting a vortex. So in the 1D system, when I insert a vortex, I'm crossing the 1D system, right? So now in a 2D torus, what I have to do is I have to make a vortex-antivortex pair and move it around a loop and then annihilate it at the other end. So basically, I have to move a vortex through the system. So that would be how this would work. But now here is another complication, which is that there are two surfaces, so the Fermion parity is sort of even trickier.
I see.
Yeah.
So it's not one to one to what you told us.
No, this is how that signature would work in this case is probably will work in some sense, but it's trickier.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm almost done. There was a lot of talk about, so now talking about Majoranas in a non-superconducting system. So this is, as I said, a Kitaev kind of model would be of state with Majorana system with Majoranas, but with no superconductivity. And from a quantum information standpoint, they're actually quite more interesting than the Majoranas, and so I wanted to elaborate this a little bit. So the problem with Majoranas is that braiding realizes only something called a Clifford group. It doesn't give you all unitaries on the qubit space. And specifically what that means, it's a group that's generated by this Hadamard gate, contains the Hadamard gate and the pi over 4 phase gate. And the Clifford group, by definition, is the one that preserves Pauli matrices. And Gottesman and Neil told us that this is not a very fun group. It's not a very interesting group in the sense that you can simulate it. Now, what Bravi and Kitaev, I think, told us, at least that's where I have seen this, is that the pi over, if you can add somehow a pi over 8 phase gate, so if you add one, well, or at least you can add a state that's rotated by pi over 8 to this system with Clifford gates, then you can generate any state you want. Right? So the Clifford gates are pretty boring, except that you need, but with one state, they become very interesting.
So this is what they mean by universal set of quantum gates.
Yeah, that's what a universal.
Unique pi over 8, essentially.
Sorry?
Unique pi over 8 gate, if you want to.
Yeah, you need, exactly. You need a pi over 8 gate from somewhere. And usually the story is, okay, Majoranas are still good in the sense that, well, if you can still get a pi over 8 gate, which is not good, and then you can still manage, but if you can get this topologically, that would be wonderful. And so what I'm talking about here is with Majorana nanowires, me and Messam thought about a way to essentially generate a Kitaev honeycomb model or a Yao-Kivelson model. In some sense, you can think of a superconductor as where the vortices are like regular superconducting vortices, and to go to this phase, I want the system to become insulating in a sense, so that the vortices have become free particles. They can delocalize, which is what the essential difference is between the Kitaev honeycomb model and these superconductors. And then the statement is, if you can make a dislocation in these Kitaev models and create these defects genons, which are the ends of the dislocation, then you can braid, and if you can take sigma particles around them, then you can generate this pi over 8 gate and everything else you want. So once you get the sigma particle as a free particle as opposed to like a long-ranged object in a superconductor, one can get this pi over. In Majorana wires, it requires a speculation. If we can get a Kitaev spin liquid in a 3D system, then then it's much closer. Oh, probably the other details become trickier.
So can I ask here? So yes. If was it using some projective measurements to get synod gate? So that's, so how do you go around it here with this?
With the Kitaev? No. So I can. So braiding. So what I'm measuring is the phase of sigma particles going around a loop. So if I measure sigma particles along, let's say, a bigger loop, then I can take a qubit and measure the total fermion parity of a pair, and that if I'm not, that gives me entanglement at least, and I'm pretty sure that can be used to create a C naught as well.
Because I thought that the braiding operators it's themselves do not actually generate the C naught.
No, so braiding, and I'm also assuming measurements, so joint measurements.
I see. So you do some projective measurements.
Yeah. Projective measurements. But then, I'm doing the braiding and everything by projective measurements anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's my summary. So spot on Oleg's suggested time. So nanowires, we've had quite a bit of advance, but there are still issues of the type where telling Majoranas from Andreev states using transport is trickier, so we need to go beyond transport. And so other systems are of course interesting. RN superconductors seem to be the next one showing quantized conductance. And then finally, I guess somewhat relevant to this workshop is thinking about Kitaev. Even if all of this works, Kitaev spin liquids are still better because, you can get a universal set of gates. All right, thanks.
So these ferromagnetic supercontactors, which already exist to begin with, why aren't they good candidates for Majoranas? Really, ferromagnets are already superconductors.
Yeah, so I think the challenge, the biggest challenge there is that the chemical potential. So.
But if you just drop a wire on top of that thing.
So, I think he's thinking like for uranium, germanium fuels.
Well, they're like, I don't know, 10 compounds which I can pull. Can name
them, but P-wave and
paramagnetic
in the bulk.
Well, I think nobody really knows what they are, but they're certainly the coexistence of fermion superconductivity is well documented, right, in a bunch of compounds. So why don't you just take one of those and just do whatever you need to do?
No, that's the problem. Definitely worth thinking about. I think there is a general, from my understanding when talking to experimentalists, is that there are sort of, and this is Viktor Yakovenko, who thought about all this close to 20 years ago and gave up almost 20 years ago, was explained to me to this, that the frustration he faced was that there are sort of materials and device communities in terms of experiments are fairly orthogonal. People who like to make fancy materials hate making devices. Actually, it's not a hate-love thing. It's just difficult. So there is a hidden... There's a hidden criterion that there should be something that you can make devices out of. But in principle, if, I don't know how gapped these things are. Like, for example, do they see Coulomb blockade and so on and stuff. And it's worth looking at.
So I have a simple question. Why are people focused on measuring the zero bias conductance peaks? Why don't they just assume that these are Majoranas and then start doing with them what?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, no, wonderful. And actually, I can, Microsoft, that was an approach that was adopted. The problem with, actually, maybe I should show, I showed this kind of, well, actually, maybe this picture is better. So something like that. So you can try to just braid, but unfortunately, the process of braiding is complex. In the sense that it involves multiple wires, it involves multiple wires and multiple steps, and I didn't actually even quite tell you what precisely we would measure. But I think the biggest challenge that at least that I, as from my understanding, that people ran into, is you have to calibrate, in the case of nanowires, you have to calibrate them into the topological phase, and that requires some tuning of gates. You're not going to do that by braiding like lots and lots of times, because the braiding experiment takes time, and so that's not possible to do with. So one needs to be able to, one needs transport in the nanowire case to at least even know that you're sort of possibly in the topological phase. Now you could say, like, let's say for the iron wires, we have very good reason to believe that they might be topological because we see a surface state and we see it has superconductivity, and there is no. The options where, well, the most boring thing that can happen is that there are Majoranas in that case. There the issue is one would need to know how to measure fermion parity. That's the next challenge. So being able to measure, measuring the Majorana and measuring the fermion parity of a pair of Majoranas is a completely, essentially orthogonal tasks. And no one has demonstrated measurement of a Majorana of a fermion parity yet. Just because the system would have to be clean enough that you can actually, that the Majorana lives, that the fermion parity lives for long enough. Yes?
So what is the status of proximatizing experimental status of proximatizing superconductors with quantum Hall states? Are there any?
Amir talked about it. Well, okay. There is certainly work on quantum anomalous Hall states and superconductors. But I think it is quite complicated because the quantum anomalous Hall state systems are very disordered, and then superconductivity just sends your electron density to some place that we don't know. Regular quantum Hall states, well, we heard from Amir, no, not Amir, Philip Kim, about this, and there again, it's only the progress has only been made on trying to fractionalize super proximatize small parts of the edge, but again, the interpretation there is still very preliminary. No. These are all graphene.
Jawad had some.
That's right. I don't know about his quantum Hall data. I know about he had a Josephson junction, but there again, where he sees some promising signatures for Majoranas, but it's more difficult to interpret than the zero bias peak. Yeah. So once he gets transport, that will be good.
You mentioned the importance of Coulomb blockade for these nanowire system. How does this translate to these iron superconductors?
That's a great question. And again, that will leave at least some kind of work for theorists to figure out. So in principle, so right now the idea would be to not use Coulomb blockade in iron superconductors, because that would be quite tricky, actually. One could just braid by moving vortices around, and one could measure vortices just by bringing vortices together and measuring the force. So that should have an effect on the force on the atomic tip, because the charge and the current has changed. Actually, charge, not charge, because it's a superconductor, that might be trickier, but at least the current has changed. These are certainly going to be less efficient than the Coulomb blockade type measurements, unfortunately. So if there is a nice way to introduce Coulomb blockade here, that would be nice. Or take advantage of some Coulomb interaction effects, or basically anything beyond this basic sort of the dumb approach would probably be nice. Yeah.
Great. Gene, could you repeat? I didn't quite catch it towards the end of your talk. You made a statement about the Pi, let's say two-dimensional Pi.
Yeah.
Being more promising. In what sense?
So in the sense that. Yeah, thanks for asking that, because I kind of zipped through this. Now I'm imagining I have a stack of Kitaev honeycomb models. and then I make some kind of...
But why do you need a stack, first of all?
Right. So, well, I need at least a bilayer. That's the important thing. So at least two. And the point is there has to be a dislocation where one layer connects to the other at two defects. And where that reconnection happens, that's the genon. And what that lets me do is take... So these genons are these dots here. So the dashed lines are those places where the reconnection happens. If I take a sigma particle around here, I stay in the same loop.
What is sigma? Sorry.
Sigma is the vortex. So it's basically the Vison in the Kitesurf liquid. So it's the vortex. But now the nice thing is the vortex is actually a local particle. I can't do this in a superconductor because what I want to do is interferometry of the vortex. I want to figure out what's the phase if the vortex goes around in a loop. That is a meaningless question for superconductor because it's got a huge halo, which is so the phase depends on everything. Here, it doesn't do that. And now I can imagine that I take, if I have this bilayer, when this genon loop, this sigma particle loop is now, it starts in one layer. When it crosses the dashed line, it's in the other layer. It crosses the second dashed line, it's back in the top layer. And now it can interfere with itself. So that, so these, the combination of these loops is what creates this pi over 8 phase.
Dashed lines are dislocation cuts?
Yeah, that dashed lines are dislocation cuts, exactly. Unfortunately, I cannot give you a simple... This has been shown by Maslin in a series of topological equivalences,
So do you feel that there is some kind of a general principle why one of the systems should have a more stable Majoranus than the other ones? Because there are also all of this cache bar 2-dex, yeah? So recently all of this, so we were also involved in this phase-tuned
Sefton
junctions, where you can actually have in plane and out of plane magnetic field, and there is lots of the phase diagrams or topological phases quite stable over there.
Absolutely. So you turn like in Mercury Telluride or
Indium Arsenide.
Indium Arsenide. Charlie Marcus. No, absolutely. No. So I don't think there is a general principle at all. The only reason I didn't talk about them is the quantized zero, the degree to which a quantized zero bias peak has been shown. In fact, those systems definitely have their advantages that we can use the supercurrent to break time reversal as opposed to, we can at least move some of the time reversal breaking to supercurrent as opposed to Zeeman and reduce the amount of Zeeman we need. But I think it's difficult for theorists to guess what is, or anyone to guess what's actually a better system until the system works, because each of the systems has its quirks. And then it really comes down to how fabrication works, unfortunately.
Okay. Our speaker has an important engagement.
Yeah.
So we should let him off the hook.
Thank you very much.